Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Demon's Kiss by Katarina Martinez. Narrated by Carly Robbins. Chapter 1. I wanted a jaunt in the Louisiana wetland like I wanted a hole in the head. But there were imps out here, and the little bastards had all but destroyed a hollow. They needed to get caught. Every breath I took stank of rot and decay. My clothes were starting to get sticky from the heat, despite it being close to midnight. And judging by the cold, clammy wetness surrounding my right foot, I think it was safe to say that my boots had developed unwanted holes. I wouldn't be keeping these, but I kept my head down, trying to keep on these little creatures' heels. You could blink and miss them. And we had. I slowed to a jog, allowing for a chance to catch my breath. "It's too dark," I said. "I can't see them." "Lumiere," Nicole shouted from behind me, and hundreds of motes of silver light exploded out in front of me, like a shower of tiny fireworks, illuminating the swampland around us. A chorus of hisses erupted, as fresh light rained down on the backs of several humanoid creatures, each barely taller than a 3-year-old, thin, long-limbed, and as pink as freshly boiled shrimp.
"There," Emmett said. "5 of them."
Dean started after them first. I followed. Then Emmett and Nicole began to move too, huffing and panting. "Can you make the light follow us?" I asked between breaths.
"No,"
Nicole said.
"Damn it."
"I can see them,"
Dean said, still ahead of us.
"Just stay with me."
I kept running. I wouldn't be able to keep this pace for long, but I counted my blessings. If it hadn't been for my new daily gym routine, I would have fallen behind the rest of the group long ago. I leapt over a fallen log and hit the slippery ground hard. We were running parallel to a body of water now, and I worried the imps would take us inside, but they didn't seem to be going that way. They had been running for a while, and if I didn't know any better, I would have said they didn't have a clue where they were going. A greenish-yellow glow erupted in front of me, and sparks bounced off a tree an instant later, making a sound like shattering glass. The imps hissed again, defiantly.
"Damn it,"
Dean growled, his voice exploding in the dark like a gunshot. He had tried to hit one with the spell we had prepared, and missed. But the light from the magic had illuminated the swamp, and I could see them now. The little pink things. These creatures were like nothing I had ever seen before. 2 of them suddenly broke left, while the other 3 continued to run in a straight line.
"They're splitting up," I said.
"Dean," Nicole said, "come with me, Emmett, with Madison."
Nicole and Dean followed the 2 imps that had gone left, as I continued to run toward the group of 3 still heading in a straight line. Emmett caught up with me quickly, his tall, lanky frame affording him a much larger stride than mine, even if I was lighter on my feet. A flash of red light shot out of the darkness without any warning, only it wasn't light. It was some kind of burning ember. Emmett reacted, putting his hands up in a defensive gesture, causing magic symbols of protection to manifest in front of his hands. The flying red ember came at us quickly, but struck and exploded against the invisible force field with a thud. The shock wave rocked my chest, and I fell on my ass. The imps erupted into a chorus of mocking laughter. I fought to my feet as another one tossed a red ember at us. It struck Emmett's invisible force field too, bursting into a cloud of red sparks. I knew it wouldn't hit me. Emmett's magic was stronger than theirs, but I put my hands up to protect my face all the same.
"You don't have to shield yourselves," came a harsh, high-pitched, raspy voice from between the trees. "We really don't wanna hurt yous."
The other imps began cackling, their voices echoing out in all directions. I balled my hands into fists and marched ahead, sending power into my right fist. As I walked through Emmett's invisible shield,
The hairs on my arms stood on end.
Monkey witches mad,
the imps cheered and taunted.
Monkey witch is mad.
The three of them were huddled close to a dead tree covered in dark algae and hanging moss. One of them was swinging from a branch in a grotesque mockery of ape-like behavior, a dig at me and my species. Another imp was hugging the tree, its long limbs impossibly wrapping around the trunk, fingers almost touching. The third imp, the one who had spoken, stood off to the side, more than half its body submerged in a low, creeping mist. Its eyes shone bright green like cat's eyes. While I couldn't exactly discern the features on it, or any of their faces, I got the impression it had a sharp, long chin, with high cheeks, a pointed nose, and pointed ears. The thing was also completely bald, and it was grinning at me. Smug little shit, I thought. I let my hand come up and showed them the crackling ball of green energy I held in my palm. I can throw those too, I said.
Try sit, monkey witch. We's too fast for yous.
I hurled the ball of energy at the weird pink creature. The imp scattered in all directions, and I missed the one that had been speaking by a couple of inches. The magic struck the dead tree and exploded into a shower of sparks with a sound like shattering glass. I gave chase again, ducking beneath low-hanging branches and skirting over crooked roots jutting out of the ground, broken logs, and small streams. The three imps I had been chasing were ahead, but I got the impression they were getting tired too. I was gaining on them. This spurred me to push harder, stretching my capabilities far beyond the point of comfortable, or even tired. I would have to quit soon, and if I hadn't caught one by the time I was too spent to keep going. Emmett cried out. I stopped in my tracks and turned, but momentum carried me over a slippery patch. If it weren't for a quick grab of a low branch, I would have gone right down into the gooey earth. I looked back toward where I had heard the sound. My heart was thundering, lungs working hard, but when I saw Emmett waist-deep and clawing to find solid ground, I couldn't help but draw in a sharp breath of air. I started toward him, but he stopped groping at the soil and stuck one of his hands out.
No, he said. You could fall in, too.
I'm going to get you out, I said, bringing my hands up and wrapping my magic around his upper torso.
Leave me here. You don't have time. You need to catch one.
He hadn't just fallen into a patch of sludge. The sludge was seeping into a small body of water not far from where Emmett was. I couldn't see anything moving in the water, but it was dark, and a fine layer of mist hovered over the ground. There could have been anything under that blanket of mist, and I wouldn't have seen it. I can't just leave you here, I said.
I'll get out. You need to catch them.
What about you?
Just go, Maddie.
Damn it. I turned around and headed in the direction of the fleeing imps. They were far now, having taken the opportunity to slip into the darkness, but I could still hear them cackling, always mocking. I was alone now, Emmett in a hole somewhere behind me, and Nicole off to the left, both she and Dean out of earshot, but that didn't matter. I had to catch them. A flying red ember came screaming out of the darkness in front of me, and I ducked beneath it. The thing detonated against a wet tree, but nothing caught fire. By the time I had recovered, another one was coming. I saw it with just enough time to stagger to the left and dodge the thing, letting it sail harmlessly across my head. This one fell into the mud and exploded, sending clumps of goop in all directions. I kept going, legs working hard, arms pumping. Off to the right, fingers of curling mist seemed to climb out of a body of water as if to beckon me up. Up ahead, I noticed the pond curved and turned directly into my path, and standing at the shoreline, picking their way across over slimy, moss-covered rocks, were the imps. One of them was ahead of the others, balancing precariously with its long arms stretched at either side, like a circus performer walking a tightrope. I leaned on a tree to catch my breath and my ragged breathing caught the attention of one of the imps, who turned around, flashing its noxious green eyes at me, and hissed,
"It's the witch,"
the thing said.
"Monkey witch doesn't know when to give up,"
another one said. A grin spread across my face. "No," I said. "I guess I don't." I stretched my right hand toward them, drawing magic out of myself and pushing it into the world. Glowing sigils appeared on my wrist and curled around my fingers. The imp's eyes widened, and it turned, jumped on a rock, and started on its way across, pushing away the one that still hadn't begun to cross the water.
"Move,"
the one still on land said.
"No, you move,"
said one of the imps standing on the rocks. They looked like children, slapping each other and bickering, each trying to have a turn on the slide before the other. So I took the slide away. With a hard swipe of my hand, one of the rocks came sliding out from under the stack the imps had been climbing over, destabilizing the entire bridge and sending it tumbling into the water. The two imps that were on it followed, falling in after the rocks with two plops. The last imp turned around to look at me, an innocent smile on its face, its pointed ears now drooping.
"We can work something out, right?"
it asked. My right hand began to crackle with green light. I cocked my arm, tossed the ball of energy at the imp, and struck it square on the side of the head. The imp hissed and snarled as the green light enveloped it and seemed to suck it into a small spherical shape of radiating light that hung suspended in the air. I reached out with my left hand this time, my weaker hand, and with a pulling gesture, drew the sphere through the air. The magic had solidified and transformed into a crystal ball that was cool in my hands. Inside, an even tinier version of the imp I had thrown the magic at floated, as if suspended in zero gravity. It looked at me and flipped its middle finger up. The other imps were gone. I wasn't sure if they'd made it out of the water or if they had been eaten by something, but that was immaterial now. I had caught one. I had proof now. Not wanting to spend another second in this blasted swamp, I turned around and headed in the direction I had come. I found Emmett, alive, well, and completely intact, trying desperately to revive his cell phone, which had been in his pants when he fell into the sludge up to his waist. "Sorry," I said. "Maybe it's fixable."
"Doubt it," he said,
but he stuffed it into his wet pockets anyway.
"Is that?"
I held the crystal ball up. "I caught one," I said. A smile brightened Emmett's dirty face.
"That's awesome,"
he said, reaching for the crystal ball. "Not with those hands, you don't," I said, pulling the ball away. "Come on, let's find the others." Emmett and I trudged through the swamp, keeping a decent pace, despite the mini swamp we both had sloshing around inside our boots. I wanted to take mine off, but then the idea of hidden snakes crossed my mind, and having wet boots suddenly didn't seem so bad. I thought Nicole's name over and over as we walked, broadcasting for her to hear. An owl hooted nearby. Night birds sang above the incessant buzz of the flying bugs that lived in the swamp, some of which I had swallowed earlier. When I heard a sound, a human sound, break the silence, I headed toward it with Emmett in tow. Soon after, we were with Nicole and Dean, who both also looked like they had been through the seven circles of hell.
"Did you catch any?"
I asked. Nicole shook her head.
"Did you?"
I showed her the crystal ball and she beamed.
"Great job," she said.
The imp muttered something from within the crystal ball, but it was impossible to hear what it was saying.
"I don't think it likes being trapped," I said.
"Well, we don't like having our hollow drained and destroyed," Nicole said. "So it can stay in there until we show the witches who the culprit is and squash that whole mess."
"Where do you think the others went?"
Dean asked. He was younger than me by maybe 2 years, but he was capable of high magic, like me, and the potential and eagerness practically oozed off his skin. "I don't know," I said.
Two of them took a dip in the swamp. What about yours?
They found a pocket of magic and used it to translocate. I don't know where they went.
That means they'll be back, I said. We'd better get some rest and call a meeting of the Covens. We need to show them what's been messing with our hollows.
Nicole nodded.
I agree.
No arguments from me,
Emmett said. Dean took a moment to toss his agreement in with the rest of us. It seemed like he still wanted to go after the imps, but he nodded.
If it makes you feel any better, Nicole said to Dean, I think we taught them a lesson tonight, and at least now we have proof of what we've been saying.
Yeah, he said. All right, let's get out of this place and go home.
The coven walked ahead as I stuffed the crystal ball into a pouch I had brought with me for just such an occasion. I tied the pouch to my belt, then looked around for a moment. It was dark out here. The moon was bright and full, but only shafts of silver light made it through the trees. In the dark, it almost seemed as though the swamp was full of people watching me. I shuddered and left, following my coven.
Chapter 2.
I couldn't help but feel pretentious whenever I decided to take my writing to a coffee shop. I would get looks sometimes from people who didn't appreciate little me taking up an entire table all to myself, and the empty chair opposite where I was sitting tended to agree with them, unhappy that I wasn't filling this table with conversation, like all of the others around it. But I couldn't always write at home. Lumiere was a sanctuary, a safe place. The powerful magic wards around the house ensured that no one could hurt anyone within its walls. But it was a big house, and I hadn't appreciated just how empty the place truly was until recently, until the people that had been living there for over 200 years had all left. So I took my writing outside most of the time, to coffee places and parks. New Orleans in the summertime was a gorgeous place, so full of color and life and people. Flowers were in full bloom, showering gardens with color and filling the air with the scent of life itself. The French Quarter was always full of groups taking haunted tours or tourists snapping photos. At night, Bourbon Street filled up with noisy, rowdy partygoers. I finished the chapter I was on and looked up from my keyboard, breathing deeply and stretching the stiffness out of my back, the result of being hunched over a laptop for hours. An employee called out an order, and people murmured and laughed over the thick whir of a frothing machine. A couple of teenagers stepped up to the bar and picked up their cups. I watched them look around for an empty space, find none, and then look to me. They didn't judge me like others had done today, and that was why I decided to signal them over, pack my laptop up, and give them the table. I left the coffee shop and took to the streets. The sun was bright and high, noon having only just passed. I strolled along the sidewalk, one earbud hanging as I picked a decent song to play on my way to the Scarlet Cat, only half paying attention to my surroundings as I went. The crossing light changed to green, and I started to walk until I heard the loud grumbling engine and had to look, and I was glad I did. The Harley was coming right at me. I jerked back just as the bike swerved around me, and I miraculously dodged it as it rumbled on. I stood still, now, my heart wedged in my throat and hammering hard, as horrible images of what could have just happened raced through my mind. Stuffing my phone in my pocket, I spun on my heel to look at the bike that had just cut me off and found the driver had pulled the Harley into a parking spot nearby. Hey, asshole, I said. You almost hit me. The guy sitting on the bike didn't look around. Instead, he took his time removing his helmet, which he hung on the handlebar, before standing up. The back of his leather jacket had an image of a snarling wolf embroidered on it, and he was wearing a studded belt with a biker chain hanging off. I could have walked away, could have just kept going on my path and ignored this all too reminiscent of New York moment. But I didn't. I walked over to him, my chest warm with anger, cheeks flushed, hand curled into a fist. I didn't care how much taller or stronger than me he was.
"Didn't you hear me?"
I asked. He turned his head to look at me as he arched over his bike to retrieve something from one of the saddlebags, and then smiled.
"No," he said. "What did you say?"
"Whoa," I thought, hesitating. He had sea green eyes that shone in the sunlight, a messy mop of shaggy black hair pressed somewhat flat by the helmet he had been wearing, and a chiseled face a mother would be scared to see on her son, for all the hearts he would break with it. His widening grin caused his lips to part, revealing a set of neat white teeth behind them. Why were the jerks always hot? I shook the dazzle off and scowled.
"I said, you almost hit me."
He pulled a brown deerskin sack out of the saddlebag and straightened out. He was taller than me, and not by a little bit, either.
"Why would you call me an asshole?"
he asked.
"We've never met."
So the jerk had hurt me. "No, but who runs a red light, nearly hits someone, and doesn't apologize?" I asked.
"Was it red?"
"You know it was."
"I must not have noticed. There was a pretty girl crossing the street,"
he said, stuffing his keys into his jacket pocket. He was about to turn around.
"If you do that again,"
I warned. That seemed to catch his attention. He glanced at me, arching an eyebrow.
"You gonna threaten me, little witch?"
My eyes darted around, scanning the sidewalk and the crossing. Nobody had heard.
"You don't know what you're talking about." "Maybe not."
I wasn't getting through to this guy, and that grin on his face was really starting to piss me off.
"Watch where you're going next time," I said,
and I turned my back to him and continued crossing the road now that the crossing lights had changed back to green. When I made it to the other side, I glanced over my shoulder to see if he was still standing around his bike. He wasn't. My heart was still hammering, and the angry heat building in my chest and neck hadn't yet simmered down. Was it what he had said, what he had done, or the way he looked? I found Nicole waiting for me outside the Scarlet Cat, and my thoughts returned to the matter at hand. Terrence, the club's large bouncer, was with her. She nodded at him and stepped away as I arrived.
"Hey,"
she said. I waved. "Hi," I said. "Is everyone inside?"
"Almost. Just missing a few. Let me guess.
Remy?" She nodded.
"Why does he think he can just skip these things?"
"Because he was in charge once, and he's used to being the one telling people where to go and what to do. Not the other way around."
"Whatever. Forget him. You have the imp, right?"
I reached into my laptop bag and produced a velvet cloth. I pulled the crystal ball out of the cloth and held it up to Nicole. The ball caught the light and shone brightly, and inside, if you looked hard enough, was the imp. Still suspended, still scowling, still giving us the finger.
"Is it stuck like that?" Nicole asked.
"No," I said. "He's just really pissed at me." A smile broke across her face.
"This is good," she said. "This is really good. Are you ready?"
"Ready as I'll ever be. You're going to do all the talking, though, right?"
"Some of it. You figured out it was imps, though, so I'll expect you to do some of the talking. I hate public speaking. Why do you think I became a writer?"
Nicole grinned.
"Don't be so dramatic," she said. And we entered the Scarlet Cat together.
When I opened the doors, it was to a crowd of witches just like the first time I visited the bar. Only this time there was no music playing. Nobody was drunk, and everyone was looking at us.
Chapter 3. Nicole and I had walked into a silent crowd of witches made up of all the new covens of New Orleans, and I honestly couldn't remember the last time I had so many eyes on me at once. My book launch event. That was it. But that had been over 6 months ago. Here were witches who practiced magic of all kinds, from pagan green magic to elemental magic to voodoo. Remy had formed one large coven in which the same rules applied to everyone. But we had disbanded that system in favor of a democracy made up of many small covens, each bringing their own specialty to the table. As we walked through the room to get to the stage with all those eyes on us, some angry, others just concerned, it became apparent that this system we had built was far from perfect. I heard two people murmuring harshly to each other as I neared the stage. Unsurprisingly, one of the combatants in this not-quite-whispering match was Harvey Walsh. He was the kind of man who wore a different watch every single day and always talked at people instead of to people. He had a scowl on his face, contempt in his eyes, and he was pointing a finger into the face of Nina Hargreaves, who, looks-wise, was his polar opposite with her bright green mohawk and pierced septum. Attitude-wise, Harvey had clearly met his match.
"You know it was you," he said to her. "And when I prove it, I'm going to move right into your space and take your hollow right out from under you."
"Oh, yeah," she said. "Good luck proving shit, Walsh. We didn't do jack to your hollow. You're just pissed you weren't paying enough attention."
I worked up the courage to speak above them.
"Guys," I said.
They turned to look at me.
"And you,"
Harvey said. I felt like I had just walked in front of a loaded gun.
"What about me?"
"You need to fix this," he said. "This whole thing is totally unacceptable, and as the mediating coven you should be."
"Relax, Walsh," Nicole said, striding past him to get to the stage. "We have the culprit right here."
I walked up to Nicole and took my place beside her on the stage. Dean and Emmett, who had been waiting for us in the crowd, followed us up and stood on the stage. Even though the stage's elevation wasn't more than a foot or so, I could see the entire room from up here, all those heads and eyes turned right at us. I could understand why Walsh and Hargreaves were so annoyed, but the others?
"All right," Nicole said. "Thank you all for coming. I want to—"
"Enough with the niceties," Harvey said. "I want to know what you found out. How did they do it? How did they destroy my hollow?"
"That's a baseless accusation, Harvey," Nina said. "Just because our turf borders yours doesn't mean we had anything to do with your hollow."
"She's right," Nicole said.
"What do you mean she's right?" Harvey asked.
"Maybe if you'd let me speak, we'd have gotten to the point by now."
Harvey let his arms fall to his side, but his face was still red. Even from up here, I could see the vein pulsing on his temple.
"Fine," he said.
Nicole turned her head to look at me and nodded.
"Care to explain?" she asked.
"Me?"
I asked in my head. She nodded. I looked over the crowd, then turned my head toward Harvey and Nina, who were both waiting for me to speak, one more anxiously than the other.
"Well,"
I said, "the thing is, you're both right."
"Both right?"
Harvey asked.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Yeah," Nina said. "We didn't do anything to his coven or their hollow."
The crowd around them began to murmur. My eyes darted around the room. This was why I hated public speaking.
"Let me explain," I said, directing myself at the two witches again.
"So, Harvey's hollow was destroyed, but it wasn't Nina's coven who did it, at least, not directly. Remember last week when you first mentioned your hollow had been damaged? I started to do some digging, and I discovered something. Yours wasn't the only hollow that had been drained of energy and violated. Ours had been, too."
"Yours?"
Nina asked, curious now.
"Yeah.
We only found out because Harvey had mentioned his wasn't feeling right anymore. So, we examined our hollow and researched possible causes for the strange energy drain. When we came up with a theory, we held a stakeout."
"A stakeout,"
Harvey said, his eyebrow arched.
"At your own hollow? Who were you expecting would show up?"
"Imps," Nicole said.
People in the crowd started talking over each other, and soon the Scarlet Cat was filled with a dull roar of indiscernible conversations. Some of the witches seemed to know what an imp was, and were speculating about how they got here, while
Sample complete. Ready to continue?